Well, and let me attack it from the other side too, is that just because the pastor's up there and he has his MDiv or DDDiv or however many, you know, letters you can put at the end of the name, at least in the United States, and I believe this is in all 50 now, that teachers either have to be striving towards or hold a master's degree. And so just because there's a holding of a piece of paper, I think he's an economist, Brian Kaplan. He wrote a book called The Case Against Education, Why Education System is Wasting Time and Money. And he talks about how, you know, these college degrees tend to be more of a signaling feature. So look at me, I'm smart. You can trust me with this job. I have this piece of paper saying as such. And then you go through pretty much 6 months of training, learning the job that they need to invest in you for you to be what I call at my job, a real person, a real boy, a real girl. and so you watch teachers and okay, they might have, you know, 7 master's degrees, but then they need to learn how to do a lesson plan or teach to 30 kids or, you know, all this stuff. So yeah. Having By that piece way, of paper isn't a thing that says, oh, I'm better than you, parent, because I went to school for 6 years for this. That might be true for education, but can you tell me that you can teach the water cycle the best, or do you need to plan it out the week before in order to teach it because you haven't done it before? So the right. education signal is just there and shouldn't be used against you. Maybe years in, like, oh, I've been a science teacher for 72 years and I've taught ever since the water cycle was just two things. but now, you know, you might have an argument against that, but again, it's
the water cycle got much easier when the firmament broke and the flood happened.
Exactly. But having someone specialized. So like we took our oldest to a speech therapist to help her with her speech, and it worked wonders. And we already paid our taxes. So we didn't feel, you know, oh, well, is this us giving up our authority to this teacher? I was right there. I took her to all her appointments. I stood within, you know, I wasn't in the room, but I allowed the teacher who I talked to before and at the end of each lesson to explain what was going on, being that active and knowing she had the ability and the education and the experience to help. And it did. And so there it is of, you know, I don't know how to play the piano. But it's not subverting my authority to take my kids to a piano player who plays well and teaches it well if it helps my child learn that skill for the greater glory.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had the exact same experience with our second oldest with regards to speech therapy. And that was one of those things where they're used to parents not being all that involved,
right?
Because of the level of gap in knowledge there, much more, or at least much more obviously to a parent between a parent and a grade one teacher, first grade teacher. So much more obviously there's a much more obvious to the parent knowledge gap between the parent and the speech pathologist as opposed to an elementary level, especially teacher. And so they're used to parents sort of sitting back, and so they were like, so we'll meet. So like your son's team is like 8 people large and we'll all have a Zoom call and we'll all talk about it and it'll take about 20 minutes. I'm like, I don't think so. And they go, well, you know, most parents, they only really have enough questions for it to last 20 minutes. I'm like, okay. Let's assume I'm not most parents. let's assume that I know, and I quoted the exact dollar figure. Let's assume I know how much of my tax money is walking in the door with my kid. And let's assume I know that 84% of Alberta parents are happy with their child's IPP, individualized. I don't remember what PP stands for. 84% of Alberta parents are happy with their kid's IPP, meaning chances are really good, if I'm not happy with this one, I should just go somewhere else, and chances are really good I'll be happy at the next one. And let's just assume I have more questions than the average parent. So they're like, okay, well, we'll still schedule you for 20 minutes, but we'll put you in front of an appointment we can move. I'm like, you should do that. you should expect that appointment's getting moved. It is a different level. And by the way, with speech pathology, totally makes sense to me that the credentialing actually makes a difference.
I wanted to throw in the little
factoid, and that would be true. So my boy had a speech pathologist, an occupational therapist that like ran the whole gamut. and I can totally believe that there are a lot of specialized skills there that are actually the subject of direct like skill style training that you would get in a higher education context. For regular classroom instruction, I just wanted to throw in the fact that I know, since I do this for a living, the degree that the teacher walks into the room with has no bearing. Like the research is pretty conclusive about this, has no bearing on how good the teacher is going to be, which actually means from an economic standpoint that our school systems should hire as few people with as few people with a degree past a bachelor's as possible, because the way their contracts are negotiated, despite the fact that the research is pretty conclusive that a master's doesn't make you a better teacher and a PhD really doesn't make you a better teacher, despite that fact, the pay raises are built into the contract. So we should absolutely be advocating for as few credentials as possible in K-12 education, yeah, because it's much more cost effective. And this is, by the way, I think this was a state and not Canada, but it could have been Ontario actually, where they had an actual astronaut. I think this was Arizona. They had an actual astronaut who did physics or whatever for NASA, and then worked for NASA, teaching kids about science for NASA. But that when he wanted to open up a micro school or a learning pod, he was not qualified to be a teacher. It's like you literally have the most ridiculous set of facts there.
Yeah.
And we
do that for college too. Like we don't make the economics teacher teach physics. We make the guy who does physics on his off days be the teacher for that. So you have someone who's interacting with it. They might have proclivities to other avenues. So, you know, you don't expect the Keynesian to teach Austrian economics, but you kind of hope that Paul Krugman has heard of a Bob Murphy before, especially with all the shots that Bob Murphy takes at Paul Krugman. And so you kind of hope that at least there's some surpassing knowledge there, and they could deride it all they want, and at least there's the knowledge base there. But when you're talking education, from what I understand, no one's going, okay, this is how to be a good teacher. This is how to teach English. Or what do you do when you have the bully sitting next to the kid he bullies? There's nothing in that education that is preparing you for those specific requirements. And so you know, I've talked to teachers pre-pandemic, pre-lockdowns is what I should say. And they're like, oh, you know, I wish parents would get involved and, you know, they're just not there. But then parents saw their education during the lockdowns and then got mad and then went to school board meetings and had the audacity to question these educators, these heroes. And it's like, well, which one did you want? And also, those parents are now asking, why can't my teenager read? And so that divorce from the parent and the child, why does that parent now, it's true, why does that parent now care that their kid couldn't read? How do you not know that about your kid? Aren't you sitting down with them and reading with them, reading to them? I mean, are you just offloading? It's not one size fits all, but also if you're a parent that's divorced from their kids, I mean, are you qualified to call yourself a parent? But barring, you know, I'm a single mother because my husband got shot and killed and I didn't know I was in this situation and I'm just trying to feed my five kids and you know, all those caveats. But
yeah,
once you suddenly start learning and then caring, you see what the power of ticked off parents can do over these last 3 years. And, you know, we've seen that National Home Education Research Institute and the U.S. Census Bureau says that there were 3.7 million homeschool students in 2020 and 2021 for K-12. And that grew to, and before that, there was 2.5 million. So we saw a growth of, you know, almost 2 million people going that way. And even more so for Black students going from more traditional public schools to 100% homeschooling or some variation thereof. And I think that's, I think that's pretty drastic changes.
If you weren't going to point this out, I was that in the United States, by far the largest cohort of new home educators were Black Americans in high union power states. So states like Michigan would be a high union power, although less so than it was years ago.
But right, true.
You had some reforms there, but I can't remember.
We still got those bailouts measure, though.
Yeah, but the measure. Cordy Angeles, among others, did a study where they applied sort of a standard accepted measure of union power in a state that's been done for right to work, to measure right to work legislation or whatever, that's been used in other fields of economics and applied those measures to see if COVID spread or union power better predicted school closures. And it was union power and it wasn't close. COVID spread did not predict, had no predictive value for school closures at all. But union power had quite strong predictive value for, and so unsurprisingly, it is the high union power states where you saw especially minority families, because it's not even just Black families, but especially minority families moving to home education. And home education was never as white and Christian as its opponents like to claim or like to paint it as, but it certainly became way less white and probably less Christian over the course of the pandemic, which I consider a very positive thing. And something similar happened here, similar in size happened here. And I consider it a good thing because when you've got new demographics, new whole sets of people going into home education and liking it and sticking with it, because you didn't see a big rebound in those numbers, at least not here. I didn't pay as close attention to the states, but I think I saw people saying that the numbers didn't snap back
right
really. And so liking it and sticking with it, that then you have whole new sets of people who know a home education family. And like there, I'd be interested to see what the overall change in the number of people in Alberta, in America, who say that they know a family that home educates. I would be interested to see how much that number has grown, because first of all, awareness that the family home educates mm-hmm. probably has gone up. But then there are a lot more families in different social circles now than the more predictable ones that are home educating. And I consider that just so good for the future, because coming at it largely from the policy side, the state is going to state. You always have to worry about regulations. And liberty does not exist on paper. You can't write it into policy. You can't make a law that will establish liberty. Liberty can only exist in the hearts of the people. So the more people actually know a home educator and would be upset if harm came to them, yeah. the more safe from regulation home education is. And so I consider that a fantastic thing.